Yes, you're on the podcast where we talk trash about the things we love to hate and hate to love. And we're your hosts, Shelby Green and Matthew Magenta.
Wow, that was... Has anyone ever struggled more to come up with two color names?
Matthew, there has to be a song about Matthew.
Matthew, is there a song about Matthew?
What's your middle name?
Robert.
Oh, that's, I'm not calling you Robert.
Matthew. Yeah, exactly. Well,
Matthew.
Is there a song? Well, it's actually poems, right? So it's like folk songs. Yeah, because it's like the Raven isn't a song, it's a poem. Yeah.
They turned it into a song, though.
Anyways, we're talking about the new Hunger Games prequel, Sunrise on the Reaping, by Suzanne Collins. It just came out. When they announced it, they also announced a movie version that would be released next year sometime. I think. I keep seeing casting rumors, but I don't
November
think that
November 2026.
But I don't think that... Have they actually, like, physically announced...
No,
we're just getting a bunch of like, supposedly they're talking with so-and-so to play Hey Mitch.
No, I'm interested in it. I didn't really follow any of the movie stuff. There's a lot of connections to the original trilogy cast. So it'll be interesting to see how they are stuck, like, you know, trying to find someone who looks like Elizabeth Banks or, you know, that sort of thing. To match the canon cast already. Ballad of the Songbird and Snakes did great financially, so it made total sense that they're excited for this to go. I think we're like 2 years away from a Hunger Games themed amusement park, so Harry Potter.
Well, I was thinking about that, but I was also thinking about a reality competition show.
Ew.
It's like, I feel like
I don't think she'd let them do that. I think that'd be so crazy.
But you know how they made like Squid Games, and then Squid Game the Experience? Like, we're not going to kill anybody in the Hunger Games.
I know, but I'm saying I don't think
laser
she'd be like
taggy kind of thing.
I don't think she would. If she has a say over licensing, I don't think that's where she would go. Whereas an amusement park where it's like about the movies and rides or whatever, I can see that.
Yeah, but
you know, there's something different about.
What do you think that the game or like the like? I feel like
well,
then the amusement
you could
park
do
would
like,
include some sort of like laser taggy kind of thing.
I don't think it would be like, oh, let's go kill the children around us, even virtually. But an amusement park could just be, oh, roller coaster through the clock tower where you're outrunning the mist or the screaming doves or whatever, being chased by dog humanoids or going through the tunnels of Pan Am. You know, like there's ways the world building is there, but I don't think they need to insert us into the Hunger Games themselves.
I think we will be getting more corporate synergy. Like there will be more of something related to the Hunger Games because clearly this is something that is ongoing. You know, it's like the first three movies and I sort of thought that was it, but then once we got the sequel and the prequel and then the prequel movie of Ballad of Songbird Snakes. Now we're getting this one. It's like, there's clearly a universe that is being.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even the rollout for the movie Songbirds, there was all that weird like Pan Am energy. Like, here's a pin from Pan Am to where do they? And it's like, wait, what are you guys? That's not the side we're supposed to be on. Like, please, sir, please don't hand me this pin and think I'll happily wear it. Or like dressing your best Pan Am style. Like, it's like, no, that's not where we're going. So I do feel like there's always been that sort of tension where this story is criticizing the sort of voyeuristic joy we get out of misery and watching violence and consuming violence. But then the movies themselves do very well because of that same voyeurism. And so sort of like, it is messy and it's an interesting tangled web. But I think Suzanne Collins, to her credit, has kind of, where the books and movies differentiate is sort of in how she, I mean, obviously, because it's a novel versus a visual, but there's a lot more character driven, like insular, look at how these people are thinking, look at what's happening to them, rather than the splashiness of the games, which in the movies has historically always been a little bit louder than the books.
Yeah, the books definitely have more of like a political undertone to them. Yeah. There's, she's, you know, always starts with these like philosopher sort of quotes at the beginning that inform kind of what the theme is. I think she is thinking about these on a deeper, more political, philosophic level than probably the average reader or viewer is, especially the viewer of the movies and the people making the movies, which are sort of more popcorn-y. Yeah. Even if they do have, you know, the same lessons to a certain extent. So I guess, well, so this book is set at the second quarter quell, the 50th Hunger Games. For those who are not intimately aware, the first Hunger Games book is set during the 74th Hunger Games. Yes. And then the sequel, Catching Fire, takes place during the 75th Hunger Games, which is the third quarter quell. There's a quarter quell, which is like a special Hunger Games every 25 games. So this one is set 25 years or 24 years sort of before the main trilogy events. But The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes is set during the 10th Hunger Games and focuses on President Snow and Lucy Gray Baird. So that
the first, District 12 victor.
Yes. So that's set 40 years before this one. And this is the Hunger Games that Haymitch wins. Haymitch is the only other victor from District 12. So now we've basically seen all of the District 12 wins throughout the Hunger Games because we got Katniss and Peeta, then we got Lucy Gray, now we're getting Haymitch. And yeah, we sort of all, I think the thing that is a little bit interesting, or not necessarily interesting, but like with the with Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, like obviously we knew who Snow was. He is a character in the main trilogy, but we don't really get very much of his backstory. And so most of that and most of the characters in those books were all brand new.
Yeah.
This, because it's linked close enough to the main series with Katniss and Peeta, we get a lot of the characters that are in that version, just like 25 years younger. And then also we sort of know what happens in this already. One, because we know that Haymitch obviously wins, but also when they're explaining his Hunger Game, like the games that he won in the original series, we sort of get a general idea of the arena and how he wins at the end. So this book, I think, was a little bit less suspenseful than Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, just because we kind of knew what was already going to happen. I guess to sort of start, what was your initial response when this was announced? And then sort of what is your general takeaway having read the book?
Oh, thank you for asking that.
Yes.
So I feel, sorry, I'm just thinking about you using that voice to talk to Kate Blanchett, and it's just making me really feel special. So thank you. Thank you for setting up that.
So when you were, when you received the script and you were asked to play the role of Lucy Gray, sort of what was going through your head?
Well, really, it's just an honor. Everyone knows the world of the Hunger Games. No, I was excited about this book mainly because I had, you know, we did an episode on Ballad of the Songbird and the Snakes.
Which I feel like you did not like that much.
I did not like
when we read it.
I did not like. I enjoyed the movie more than I expected. And then I reread the book and I did like it a lot more. I realized I hadn't been fair to it. And, you know, whether that's just like a need to conform or not, I really do think that what I was reading is sort of like, oh, woe is this poor child who could have been different if only he'd been loved more, was a little more complex and interesting, and sort of his hidden, you know, nastiness throughout was less to do with what could have been and more like this child was always a manipulative dick. Anyways, so when this was announced, I was excited. I'm a Suzanne Collins lover. Honestly, I was thinking about it. I think The Hunger Games might be like my comfort books. I don't know what that says about me, but I've reread it far too much. I love me some Katniss. Love me PETA. I am not above reading Hunger Games fan fiction. So the world of Haymitch, I was interested. I was sort of like, oh, okay. I mean, this is the most obvious thing you could do. I honestly thought it would have been a trilogy. I thought they were setting it up to kind of be his games, his post games, and then I don't know, something else, because what? It seemed like there was a lot of room here, because there's the 25 years, and I figured, one, corporate synergy, why would you turn down the chance for a
trilogy, you know,
multi-part story? And two, I just think going from a 17-year-old to the what would he be, like 50-year-old?
Mm-hmm.
By the time we meet him, there should have been some interesting things. And also on top of that, one of the world building parts we haven't seen is sort of that behind the scenes of the games, like the idea of him being a, what's it called? Not trainer.
The coach?
The
mentor.
Mentor. I think that could have been interesting. So when I realized this was a one and done, I was kind of disappointed. And I was like, okay, this is going to be fan service-y. It's just going to be about connecting dots. And I don't know if that's really like someone I'm that compelled to spend 400 pages with. So the book itself, I would say I was sort of like meh on. I can see
reading it or when it was announced.
Oh, no, reading it. So this is my reaction to it.
Okay.
I wanted to love it, and I do think it was more entertaining than Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. Like, I think this is your bread and butter sort of Hunger Games. So the games themselves were interesting. The cast of characters, she's really good at building really interesting, punchy, propulsive sort of set pieces and character moments and all of that. So it is like a very fast read, very big page turner. Like, I had a good time reading it. Like, it was, I don't want to say fun, but it was entertaining. It, you know, I enjoyed it, but I did feel disappointed by it, because I felt like the way she positioned it as being like, I'm exploring propaganda and how propaganda works. And like, her inspiration was that quote, the easiness with which the many are governed by the few. And I think that one is a very prevalent topic, and two, there is a lot of question marks around like the Hunger Games and why they went around with this. And obviously we got a lot of that with Ballad, where it is about Coriolanus like making the games more entertaining instead of just miserable, and so we see why propaganda like that can, how that can be spun. But the way, I don't know, I just felt disappointed by some of the choices or sort of the withholdings in this book. And then on top of that, all the fan service-y stuff just felt like too niche. I mean, too like neat and tied up. And so, yeah, it was kind of like disappointing, even if it was a fine read.
I think that I really liked the first two books. I think the third book is kind of like whatever.
You don't get it.
I think the problem with the third book is that it should have been two books, really. Like, she needed more space. She was trying to wrap everything up in a three book trilogy, and it's like you really needed more time to sort of sort through all of that like stuff that wasn't the Hunger Games at the end. But I liked, I think, A Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes more than you did initially
Yeah.
reading it. This I enjoyed. I did sort of get through it quickly. I think that this suffered from a couple of different issues. One, this is now like the fourth time we've gone through this process of the Hunger Games.
Yeah.
And they think that sort of like some people were saying about the White Lotus, it's like the formula needs a little bit of zhuzhing because it's like we've sort of seen this all roll out before. Yeah. And at least with the Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, it's like it's so early that the games are very different to a certain degree. But this kind of felt like, okay, like I know the beats and how this is going to work. And then also, because we know who wins, there's not really like a suspense element at all. It's mostly just like, how is this going to happen? And she throws like some like wrinkles into the plot, you know, like in the reaping, his name isn't picked. And you're like, okay, well, but obviously he goes. So how does this work? And it's like, oh, well, one of the people tries to escape and gets killed. And so then he gets put in. So it's like there are some things like that throughout here where it's not quite as obvious as you would think it would be. But it's kind of like, you know that the other tributes from District 12 are all going to die in like sort of sad ways. You know that there's going to be some careers left at the end who they have to face off against. You know there's going to be a bunch of cannon fodder. You know that there's going to be these sort of like moments where we're playing to the camera or trying to send a message to somebody through something and stand up to the big bad. But also I think whereas the original Hunger Games, you sort of didn't know if Katniss was going to like beat the Capitol or how these things were going to work. With this, it's like, okay, well, you know that Haymitch is not going to win this battle with the Capitol. And so when these people are like, oh, maybe we're going to blow up this, we're going to, you know, take this out. It's like, okay, I know that's not going to work. So it sort of feels like we're spinning our wheels a little bit. I think that this is sort of a side tangent, but I think if we did, I also think that another part of the problem here is that we're one, always with someone from District 12, and it's always sort of in a first person perspective. I mean, I guess with Coriolanus, it was like he was in the Capitol, but he was attached to somebody from District 12.
Yeah.
I think that if she writes another book, it would be helpful to have it be more of a multi-person point of view stories where it's like we're getting thing, you know, more like Game of Thrones, where it's like, okay, this chapter is from this perspective.
No, but that's the whole angle, though, is that it's like it's about the human element. It's not about the machinations, you know.
Well, no, but I think that that could be like we can get human elements in there. But it's like even if you had that be from two different perspectives or three different perspectives, it's like then we sort of don't know what's going to happen, and also we're getting to see some more interesting things. It's like, what does District 4 look like? Like, I don't know. Have like like we don't really know about these.
Yeah, but imagine if it was like, I mean, I get what you're saying, because to me, I think that's one why it would have been more interesting to have him after he won the games, like having to do these mentorships where he's interacting with other mentors.
No, and I do think that would be interesting. Yeah.
And I also think another great book would have been taking a random character from District 2 and following them type thing. Like, instead of this fan service, like, let's revisit our old buddies type thing. Yeah. Because I do think that, that's like the interesting world building that we only get snippets of when they run into these different tributes of like, oh, they like to fish, or, you know, they have these skills. And this is why District 2 is so close to the Capitol and all that. But yeah, I don't know if I would recommend like changing the entire format, like, well, of how she writes.
I don't think she needs to change the... Well, okay. One, yeah. Like, I think if we got up the perspective of like a career or something, it's like, what's going on with that group of people? Because that's a very interesting thing of like, okay, we're now training to go kill people, and how does that work? But I think that the problem is that if it's from one person and they're in the Hunger Games and it's first person, they have to win the Hunger Games because if they die, then the story ends.
Yeah.
It's always like, okay, so that removes an element of suspense in there. And I think that also, if you had it from multiple different perspectives, you could sort of hide what other people are doing a little bit more. So it's like, oh, you know, there would just be more culmination.
Oh, Matt, it sounds like you need to read Hunger Games fan fiction. Like that's that's exactly what they're doing, is filling in the blanks from other POVs. But I would argue, like, yes, we knew what would happen, because even in Catching Fire, I think I looked this up. I couldn't find the direct quote, but I'm pretty sure in Catching Fire, there's mention that Haymitch says, oh yeah, after I won the games, they killed my whole family and my girlfriend. And so it's like, we even knew like that element. So it wasn't like,
that's why he's an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And also, it's like, we knew about the fact that the arena was gorgeous and everything was poisoned. And we knew about the fact that he threw the axe bounced back on the force field. So it was...
But I think that the suspense was more wrapped up in, like, her original, thesis was, you guys should be uncomfortable with this. And so I think that's the thing, is she's good at making us attached with to people that we know do not stand a chance. And so it's less about what's going to happen and more like, how much will this destroy me?
Yeah, but I kind of feel like there's a, I don't know, maybe this is me, but I felt like, because I sort of knew what was going to happen the whole time, I like purposefully did not really get that attached to a bunch of these characters, because I knew that they were going to die.
Right.
I was like, okay,
that's a struggle. Yeah.
But I think it's different. Like in the first Hunger Games, you are attached to PETA and Katniss both. Mm-hmm. And you do have a sense that like, oh, maybe Katniss would die and let PETA live. You know what I mean? Like, like it could get down to the two of them and whatever. And then I think with Catching Fire, it's like there's so many characters that you kind of like, and you know that some of them are gonna die.
Going wrong. Yeah.
But there's also this plot of like, oh, maybe we'll break the game. And so you're like, okay, well, maybe this could go to the end of the Hunger Games and one of these people wins, or Katniss beats everybody again and everybody else dies, but also maybe not. Yeah. But with this, it's like all of the plots of, oh, maybe I'm going to break the Capitol, maybe I'm going to break this. It's that's not going to happen. Yeah. And then like I think the best character in this book is Maisley, the... like mayor's daughter, who kind of starts out as this like annoying, like kind of bitchy, upper crusty girl, and then becomes like this really interesting, like deep, fascinating character. Yeah, who lasts, is one of the last people left in the games.
Yeah,
and so I found her so fascinating, and it's like, you know that she's gonna die, but I really liked her anyways and got attached to her. But I sort of feel like, had I not known what was going to happen, I would have maybe cared about some of these other people a little bit more.
Yeah.
Where some of them, when they're talking about like Beatty's son or whatever, I'm like, okay, well, yeah, that person's like not lasting long. I'm like, he's got the rue spot of like, okay, nice person, like dies early. And I also think just within like the structure of the book, since we've followed it through four times, like even like, and this is not to say that I was bored, because I enjoyed this and read it through quickly.
No, I hear you.
But I think like, I'm sort of maybe at my, like, I think if we got another book and it was another run through the whole thing of like the reaping, and we get on the train and we go in and there's the training and there's the raiding and it's the costumes and the parade and the whatever. Interviews. It's like, I think that I've gone through that as many times as I can go through it without some sort of something being different.
Well, I think that ties into sort of the criticism / beloved element of this book, which is sort of the, is it fan service? Because you do end up meeting basically every single character that comes up in Hunger Games, Catching Fire, Mockingjay. Like, there's so many characters that popped up. And I think that's what was meant to be the surprise. Like, that's what was meant to be the what's going to happen, is sort of less about the games and more about these people behind the scenes. So, like, oh, that's how Oh my gosh, I'm drawing.
Like Effie gets her job.
Yeah, Effie. Yeah. They get it's just sort of like that took me out of it in some ways because it did feel very convenient based. Because I think that's where I struggled is Haymitch is a very interesting character. And I think stepping back and being like, how does a spunky, got a lot to live for, you know, fairly happy kid go from that to this drunken mess in Hunger Games that we see? And that's like a sad story. It's inevitably going to be a sad, compelling story. But here it felt kind of like forced in some ways to like put this Katniss mantle on him, even though I don't think it needed to be like that, because in actuality his number one thing is his family and his girl back home. So if he was really thinking about that, then he would have played the rules a little tighter, I think. But he gets swept up really quickly in this sort of anti-Panem plot. And some of that made sense. It's like, oh, I don't want to go out on these, like, I want to paint my own poster or whatever. But it felt like almost, yeah, it felt like it was serving the point Suzanne Collins wanted to make instead of really making sense for this character. Like, she wanted to have it both ways, where he was so driven to get back so that when he eventually loses everything, that's, like, so brutal. But he also wants to be this, like, hell-raising, fuck the patriarchy, like screw you Snow type thing. And so there was a lot of like waffling that slowed down the plot even in the games, because it was constantly like, I'm gonna go for it, and then it was like someone died and he'd be like, oh, I shouldn't have gone for it, and then he'd be re-energized and he's like, I'm gonna do it, and then it's like, oh no, that really didn't turn out well. And it was just like that over and over with every meaningful death basically. And all in all, I was just like, why is Snow letting this guy live? Like, if he had his eye on him from day one, it just felt like, you know, plot armor to not have the targeted dragonflies go and lick his eyeballs out, you know? Like I just felt confused sort of by the power Haymitch was given as sort of the instigator of this attempt at, you know, anarchy, versus him being this small town guy who just wants to get home, who only cares about his girl, Lenore.
Lenore Dove.
Yeah.
We always must say her first
Lenore Dove. Name. Yeah. Love her like all fire.
Yes. I think that's part, like a sort of an issue with all of the Hunger Games books. Like, yes, these are all children, so it's like their thinking capacity is like not necessarily what ours is, like as a 30-something year old.
Basically malnourished.
But yeah, and it's like some of these are like 12-year-olds, you know. So it's like when you're thinking about it in that regard, it does sort of shake you out of it a little bit, because in my mind they're all sort of like 25-year-olds. And then they'll be like, and he's 13. You're like, oh god. Okay. He doesn't sound really like a 13-year-old, but sure. It's like, okay, we have to have these games every year, so which Snow is very into, but then he has to sort of spin them a certain way. Mm-hmm. But it's odd sort of like how much it seems like he is dictating what is happening and how much he's just letting it go. Because you would sort of think that, especially with these mutts involved and things that, you know, that they can sort of put their thumb on the scale, that it would be much more like, okay, this person's going to win, this person's going to win, whatever. Where instead, there are some people who get knocked out for those kind of reasons, but then there are other people who don't, and it doesn't really feel like that makes sense in this book, or really in any of them, I don't think. But
In the first one, you know, he doesn't know what to expect with Katniss, but then that's sort of undone by how obsessed he is with District 12 in Songbird, Ballad. So it's like, I liked how Snow sort of got more than he expected when Katniss kind of tricked him. Like, that felt interesting. And that was also a reason why those books did so well, is because she was actively going against this sort of like chosen one trope. Like, Katniss did not want it, did not call for it. She was just kind of surviving. And a lot of it was dumb luck. And then in the end, this one act of, you know, courage, or is seen as being as sticking it to the games by promising to kill her and PETA, is really just like a self-preserving. She doesn't want to like kill this guy, so she'll just kill herself. Like, she's not like a hero in the traditional sense of, you know, special powers and born for this, and it's been destiny since the day she was born. But yeah, with Haymitch, it's like, I don't even remember why Snow is so invested in him right away, except that he's been holding on to his love for his hatred for District 12 for 50 years or something.
Well,
because he basically immediately says, you will die in these games. Like, sorry, I'm going to kill you in these games. You took it too far with the...
isn't it because... It's because of the stuff with... like at the reaping ceremony.
Oh, yeah, right? yeah. He does a big show of the dead body. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the reaping. And then also when he gets to the Capitol, he's like drags the body in the in the like chariot race thing. Yeah, so yeah, it's like, so I think he is making like those stances earlier on. But
then why not kill him? Like, why would Snow dangle that? Like, it doesn't like, make sense. Like, he'd just kill
him. Like, why don't you just sort of like send the mutts at him like immediately?
Yeah, exactly.
And getting rid of all these people. But also, with Katniss, it's like she also sort of is the out. Like, I don't know who he thinks he wants as a winner.
Right.
Because if you, because Katniss, like, I guess maybe isn't so overtly against the Capitol right away, but she kind of is. And she's definitely not like either A, one of these super mousy people who's kind of just going to go along with things, or B, one of these like career tributes who like wants to win. So it's like, if he is trying to pick somebody who he wants to win, it's sort of strange that he would let either of these people get anywhere near the end, because he does have the control to basically kill anybody at any point that he wants to. I guess my second point about the Haymitch of it all and his attitude is like, why is it so special that he has this like hatred towards the Capitol?
Right.
It kind of feels like, if yes, to a certain degree, there is the thought of like, okay, if I win the Hunger Games, then I get like this glory kind of, but not even really, because it's not like you get to move to the Capitol and become a citizen or something like that. It's like, you still are stuck out in this random place you grew up in, and then just have to shuttle back and forth every year dealing with these kids who are dying and everybody hates you. So it's like, it's not like that good of a gig. And then also, like, obviously there are sort of looming threats of, okay, if you do something during the games, then your family could get hurt. But that doesn't seem like it's so overtly known by everybody. I guess I just feel like if there's 48 tributes here and they know that only one of them is going to live, that there'd be a lot more like no fucks given in the run up to this, in the like F you Capitol, like you guys suck, like how dare you, like I'm going to die anyways. So like, I'm just going to flip people off and, you know, whatever. And it's like, really not that many people in any of the books are going into it with that mentality. Yeah. It feels like a lot of people are either like
resigned,
sort of pro Capitol, or really mousy about things. And that does not feel realistic to me, that there wasn't more people in this group of 48 who were sort of down to just like be dragging the Capitol. And
that's the propaganda thing, right? Like, that's the whole point.
But like, that doesn't feel like it would, like, I understand how propaganda works in the real world.
Yeah.
And it just feels like, given this scenario and what these people have, that it doesn't really make that much sense for these people who know that they're going to die, and also who are, you know, petulant teenagers, to kind of just be like marching to their death so easily, unless there was like more of a threat that, okay, if you say something, like, we're going to kill your family. But that doesn't seem like it's...
Well, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of the characters in this are kind of trying to go their own route. Like, you know, there is kind of a pushback with the with BD's son trying to organize this this pack and helping with the with Haymitch's, I don't know, convoluted plan. I don't know. Like, I think, like, I agree that in an ideal world, you'd be like, well, that's, I mean, that's the question, right? Is that's the propaganda, is like, okay, you're putting your name in this hat to be called, and you're not really doing it because you want to participate in the game. You're doing it for food. And so if you draw the short stick and you're sent to your death, and you've been trained your whole life that, like, oops, sorry, it sucks for 2 to 4 people in each district, like, best wishes. I think there is a natural tendency to just go along with what's been presented as your reality. I don't think people's natural inclination is to be like, well, if I'm going down, I'm dragging you with me, especially when you don't have power to do anything except yell at a TV and you're actively watching that TV get edited in real time. So I think that's part of it, is like with Haymitch's getting called into the games, there's all that talk with Plutarch, who's like actively being like, oh yeah, we're gonna cut here, we're gonna add this, now pretend to react to this. And so you're like seeing the futility of making moves, and I think that's what drives Haymitch in the end, is like, well, what the fuck was that all for? And then he just isolates himself and tries to forget it, because he's like, yeah, there's no point in fighting this machine when the machine can outpace you in marketing and news. So, like,
I get that all from the perspective of the people in the districts of, yeah, like, okay, I don't want to, like, cause trouble. These peacekeepers have guns. I don't want to get, you know, drawn in the reaping. So I'm going to be a good person. I'm going to go along with this. I'm going to, you know, not make a big stink, even though the Hunger Games are terrible. Like, let's just cross my fingers and hope that, you know, my kids don't get selected and we move on. Like, sucks to suck for, yeah, the 2 people who do every year. But, like, there's a lot of us. Hopefully it's not me. What I don't understand is, like, once you've been selected and you are then know that you're going to be going through a whole slew of, like, televised things. Yeah. Like, yes, they're editing stuff, but it's kind of like you don't really have anything left to lose at that point. So I feel like,
well, the will to live is strong. So you could be the one.
Okay, everybody. So we usually are very on top of these things, but we did have a technical difficulty where my audio just randomly cut out halfway through the recording. So we are now recording the second half of the episode again, but we sort of can't remember exactly what we talked about in the second half versus what we talked about in the first half. So if we're saying repeats of things, yeah, that's why. You also missed me sort of like really obliterating Shelby. Very strongly. Shelby had a lot of weak lane points, and I really brought home the hammer.
I have my recording, so I can release a behind the scenes extended edition with all of my very eloquent and well-researched points in our discussion of this novel. So
I think what we were discussing when the episode recording cut
it
off
happened, yeah,
yes, was that I was sort of like, why aren't people in the Hunger Games, like the tributes, sort of like more willing to just kind of like go out there and do whatever and piss off the Capitol? Because it's like, okay, yeah, you're already dying. You know that you're dying. I mean, I guess like you have a 1 in 24 or 1 in 48 chance of,
it's not nothing,
coming home alive. But I think that especially if you are sort of looking at your fellow tributes, or even if you're not looking at them, it's like your chances are so low and you have to just be so furious at the Capitol for this whole system that I just don't understand why so many people go through all of these steps before they even get into the arena with this press conference and the reaping and whatever, without like putting more sort of negative energy out there and making it more difficult for the game makers, especially when if you are shitty or you try to run, you might just get shot in the head, which is a lot better way to go
than
to
be
ripped apart by 1,000 squirrels, you know? So,
well, I think, and I might have started this point earlier, but you can't imagine your way out of your reality that easily. And so I think history has shown, and that's sort of the point Suzanne Collins was trying to make, is once there's an established system and that system overwhelms people's freedom to think and imagine, then they're just going to go along with it because that's all they know. So it's like the same thing with all sorts of cultures throughout history of like sacrifice or the stories of throwing women into the ocean to feed the beast. Like, it's like, you just think that's what you do, and so you do it. And I don't think everyone's natural inclination is to be a rebel rouser, right? Like, I think that's actually much harder to think is worthy of time instead of just dealing with the hand you've been dealt.
I think that the difference with sort of society in general versus people in the Hunger Games is your odds. You know, I think if you're in a, you know, a totalitarian government regime, you think, oh, you know, yes, they're killing people, but like, what percentage of the population are they killing or are they putting
no
in jail?
No one's thinking in percentages.
No, like, I think that they, but I think you subconsciously are of like, okay, like I have this family, you know, it's Nazi Germany, but we're trying to keep them safe. Like it's easier for me to not say anything. Mm-hmm. I think it's different when it's like, okay, here are 48 people, 47 of you are going to be dead in 6 days. I think that like inspires a little bit more. But also, I was thinking about this last night after we recorded.
Yeah, after I eviscerated you. Yeah.
Well, and I do just sort of feel like I individually am a very sort of, I don't know, like, I don't want to say principled because I feel like that makes me sound stuck up.
Yes,
but
yes,
I think that because of my like super religious upbringing and just like the way my mind works, I'm a very decisive person. And if I'm out on something, it's really hard for me to like fake.
So like if you're out on life, you're like, you know what?
I think if I got picked for the Hunger Games and I was pissed off, I would have a really hard time being like, okay, like, yay, love this, blah, blah, blah. I think I think when they're like, how do you feel? I'd be like, fuck you, Caesar Flipperman. Like, go to hell.
But psychologically, we're programmed to want to live. So if there is a chance, if there is a tunnel of light, you're drawn to it. And so, yeah, it's easy to say, well, I'll probably die, so I might as well. But in reality, faced with this situation and having the idea, okay, but if I play my cards right, I could win. I think that's much harder to ignore just biologically than you're allowing yourself. Because, I mean, yeah, you think, oh, there's no chance. But then there are like random one-offs, or you could like size up people around you and be like, well, I'm smarter, I'm quieter, I'm fitter. Like, and you could think, okay, if I have to play this game on the chance that someone in the audience pities me enough to send me medicine or send me food, then why wouldn't I? And I think that's sort of what Suzanne Collins was trying to draw in Songbird. Why do I keep calling it Ballad? Ballad, because she talks about how the games weren't entertaining at first and the players weren't really that vicious. But once there was an element of dangling that carrot in front of them, then there is sort of this new motivation to try because you can sort of see a strategy for being the one.
Yeah. And I do get that with like the majority of people. I think my question is just like, okay, if we're doing this every year and we're picking 24 people every year, I think that the Capitol would have to have had more pushback by the time we got to the 50th Hunger Games. And sure, they're like editing stuff and we don't know because we're just getting stuff from Haymitch's perspective.
Yeah.
But I'm like, it just feels like at this point there would be more, like people would be less, there would have been more examples of people who were like putting up more of a fight.
But I think that's part of the like propaganda machine too, is that, yeah, like what Katniss did was sort of not revolutionary. Like, she was just kind of reacting in the moment, like putting the flowers around Rue, or, you know, threatening to kill herself with PETA instead of killing him. Like, it wasn't necessarily remarkable until it was. And so I feel like historically you can imagine a world where every games there might be loud, angry people. But if they're killed off, they're forgotten. If they're like, you know, it doesn't matter, because the reality is the games continue. So even if they are ranting at Caesar or throwing tantrums like Joanna does in Catching Fire, then it's sort of like part of the show. And you just remember the whole show instead of these individual moments of like you know, the victor gets to write the history, and not just in the editing room, but I mean in the way we retell the story going forward. And so even those acts of rebellion aren't remarkable outside of that, you know, Hunger Games itself. And the end result is still this one person won, so everything else doesn't matter.
See, I feel like that is actually very incorrect based on like how people watch reality TV. Like, as someone who watches a lot of reality TV,
but in this world, they're being edited out, you know?
Yes, like with the editing or whatever, but I'm like, yeah. I feel like if you think about like the biggest moments in reality TV, it's not necessarily like who wins. It's a lot of like things that happen between the person who got 15th and the person who got 12th right. in an early episode. So,
but I think if you think about like Katniss putting the flowers on Rue, that was seen as inspiring of a revolution for some, but for the Capitol, it was like, oh, what a cute story. Like, it was fodder for, you know, your water break room. Like, it wasn't necessarily seen in the same way because they're just buying into it as a show. And so those little acts of rebellion might be splashy, punchy, you know, moments to discuss, or how Haymitch was so ballsy to use the force field to win the games, that becomes its own sort of legend. But that doesn't mean the original intent remains, oh, he hates the Capitol and that was revolutionary and every yeah. like, you know, I think it's like,
I just think 75 years is a long time to be doing Hunger Games, and that there would have been more. Like,
but we don't know that there wasn't. Like, that's why the utility of this.
But nobody is saying. But like, yeah, okay, right, whatever.
Because once we're in the districts, you don't have the time or energy to think, oh, maybe something was edited in this show and actually this is how it happened. And so that means that other people don't agree with these games. And so maybe if we rise up, we can overthrow these games. And like, that's the whole point of propaganda and, you know, fascism and totalitarianism, yeah,
that the world building here is not like that true to life. Like, I think, and I think that that's, you know, what happens in every, like one of these sort of YA kind of series, but I'm just like, this, like, and I think especially with this book, there was just a lot of things that felt like, I don't like, okay, sure. Like, I understand why this is happening for the plot. I feel like one thing that I'm pretty sure we talked about at the end of the episode that we did not talk about yet was the water tank situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I feel like we need to discuss, because I'm still, even after talking about it yesterday, very confused as to what the purpose for that was. Like, why they thought that him blowing up this water tank, what they thought it would do. But then also, when it happens, like, what does it actually do in the game? Mm-hmm. And is that just sort of like a symbol for the, like, futility of it all? But it felt like such a major plot point that we were working towards, and then it happened and it sort of was not really referenced again.
Yeah.
And it was confusing. Did it actually hurt anything? Like, because the moment that the water tank explodes, then the volcano goes off, and then it's sort of like, oh, well, we're now on that sort of plot of things instead. So I was like, did the water force the volcano to explode?
So the storyline is, you know, Haymitch is in the games, but before he gets in, Beatty and Plutarch are kind of like, hey, we actually have this idea for disruption if you're game for a little rebel rousing. And so they're able to like sneak in all these various items through, you know, whatever things they can think of. And it's all very convenient. But I do think it, the idea that they talk about in the book is, yeah, this isn't going to end the games, but it could disrupt it enough that it makes a statement. Like, you know, it's not necessarily to save everyone in the games, but it's more to, you know, break the system and see what happens. And so if I remember correctly, Haymitch is like, okay, yeah, let's, like, to your point, he's like, well, I'm going down probably, so I might as well do this. And maybe that'll show, like, the districts that, you know, like, shock them out of their reverie almost. So I think the idea is that once he floods the computer system, that the games will, like, freeze up, like, they won't be able to keep filming or whatever. And so then the footage would stop for the districts. I think that was the main point. But then, yeah, once it does happen, it doesn't work, which is interesting in itself. But she does kind of just move past it in to get back into the games. And one reason I think is because Haymitch's brain is like flip-flopping on whether or not it's worth it. So yeah, I think if we'd had a third person, it would have been more of a panic of the game makers being like, well, let's set off the volcano so we don't have to explain this. Like, let's get the focus back on this instead of this weird glitch. We don't, you know, like, it's like, we don't want people to focus on the 1 second jitter that happened on camera. So let's do a big explosion and move on with our lives. But since we're with Haymitch, it did feel kind of like, oh, like, yes, you have the letdown, which in itself was an interesting narrative moment for these sort of hero stories we want. But he's so like flip-floppy waffling on whether or not he wants to keep on keeping on that it's sort of like you do just kind of feel, I don't know, like I felt kind of like, I don't want to say bored, but like it was the classic like, oh, I don't, it's pointless, I'm not gonna do it. And then someone comes up and inspires him and he's like, yes, I'm gonna do it. And then he's like, oh, that didn't work, so I'm not gonna do it. And so that was the entire second half of the games for him, was just this like inner battle that seemed really plot focused rather than true to any character we'd seen. Because yeah, I kind of felt like Haymitch either would have committed fully and not been like wishy-washy on it, or he would have been like, well, this is kind of a dumb plan, like, and let's just like get back to the games. So
it was also like so convoluted, the steps that they had to go through to build the bomb, where it's like, okay, we have to get this thing from this person's necklace, and we have to get this thing from whatever, and we have to find it. It was just so many pieces. And then also, it's so obvious what happened. It's not like, oh, the game makers don't know that he went down there and blew it up. So then I feel like they are obviously going to be able to trace back, like, where did these pieces come from? Like, who knew about this? Mm-hmm. It just feels like that they would be catching on to BB and Plutarch somehow through this. And then also, as sort of another logistical nightmare in this book, we have this whole plot regarding these potatoes and how we're going to turn the potato into a lamp. The light bulb. And I feel like that never really like plays out.
Someone even though we're dragging this potato. Something, right? I don't remember what.
It's like at the end, he uses it to like see that the girl in the tree is like to do something with her, you know, where she's like,
that she's sick. She needed the light bulb.
But it was like, what? Like, I just, it felt to me like this book, like the first three, like the first trilogy obviously was a story that she came up with and, you know, had time to sort of work on before the books came out and before the books became popular. The second, Ballad of Songbird and Snakes, like, came out so long after the original trilogy that you could tell that, like, she had an idea that she sort of, like, worked through and built out. This just felt a little bit rushed in, like, oh, that movie did really well with Rachel Zegler, and so we got to sort of get something in the works, and we're going to launch this book and this movie at the same time, so we got to write the book to get the in. There was just like some things that I felt like didn't quite hit. And then also we are following the same exact format as the other three Hunger Games, and it was just a little bit snoozy.
Well, I think that's part of it, is like she had to set it apart from Katniss, so he couldn't be the same sort of kind of accidental hero, and he couldn't be stumbling into this rebellion, and he couldn't be like it's not Lenore Dove, who was it? Lucy Gray, where she realizes she can perform for the audience and kind of wiggle her way to the finish line that way. And so he had to be like distinct, but also somehow line up with the Haymitch we know. And so I think that is an interesting challenge, because in a Haymitch book, you would have sort of the same Katniss plot line where this guy gets in and he realizes like, well, I don't want to, you know, like fuck this machine. I'm going to stand up for these people and inspire revolution, but it can't work out that way. So I think she like had to tease that sort of fiery spirit, but then also justify why he didn't do anything for 50 years. So it did feel kind of like there was a convenience of plot and sort of the plot armor around it, because it was like fan servicey enough that we had to meet every single character he ever knew. And so what was Plutarch doing? What was Beatty doing? What was Effie doing? But then on top of that, they're trying to make a games that ends up how we already knew it ended up. So yeah, I think, like I said, like this was an entertaining read, and I felt like the games itself were entertaining. Like it was a very propulsive read, right? Like it was fun to read. And she has her usual shtick of like really making interesting side characters. But it did start to feel kind of, I don't know if it's laziness or just like limited scope of work, but it did start to feel kind of like, okay, there's something basic about the way his choices are being made. Like it didn't really feel true. Like, because even in the beginning, he's all about, well, let's pair up, let's stand together, let's stick it to the man. But then as soon as Plutarch is like, well, you could do this instead, he's like, okay, yeah. And so he leaves the group, which I think needed to happen for him to win the games, as it was foretold in Catching Fire. But then that robs the whole joy of that teaming up of these non-careers. And so we didn't get to see that as readers, even though that was the more compelling part of the setup. So it kind of like, there were a lot of fun elements being like sprinkled around, but due to the limitations of the path she had to stick to, it kind of ended up feeling patched together.
Yeah. I sort of am a little bit worried of where the Hunger Games is going after this book, because I do feel like we'll probably get another one at some point.
Well, that's why I think she should have done a duology of Haymitch and done after the games. Like, I think that is the more interesting part and would have allowed, one, us to glob onto a character we already know, but two, get to see more of the world outside of District 12 and what life is like for victors and how this has to wear on your soul, like being the mentor to these kids who are statistically likely to die. And so I don't know if we talked about that earlier in the episode, but that was where I thought it was going. So when the ending ended up having that epilogue that tied right into Mockingjay and PETA and Katniss living happily ever after with him, I was like, oh, this felt, it was giving Furiosa, where it's like, oh, okay, we're just rushing to this now and that's over and done. Whereas the interesting part is sort of that, like, obviously it's not like, I don't want misery porn where he's like a drunkard and has to suffer for 50 years watching everyone die. But I think I could have taken more of that than the Raven 27 times over, you know?
Oh yeah. So many poems. I was just skipping over those every single time they made an appearance.
He's just haunted by Lenore.
It's like, now we've seen all the District 12 victors, so it's like we'd have to either switch to a different district if we want to follow a winner, or like follow a loser. Like obviously all these people who Haymitch is a mentor to are going to lose, so that's an interesting wrinkle. And I feel like also, like, yes, it could be a situation kind of like Ballad, where we're following a mentor of somebody. So they're sort of like watching the games through the TV and we still sort of get to see the games. But it's like, even in that book, what's his face? Snow ends up in the arena for a bit because they need to sort of zhuzh up the action.
She's really,
so yeah, I feel like having a, you would have to like maybe do like both perspectives, like switch back and forth between Haymitch and the person in the game. I don't know.
I honestly think the whole idea of this being about propaganda and exploring propaganda didn't necessarily hit for me because stepping back from it, like I can see the threads, but I do feel like all we got in the book were just repeated lines of like, I'm going to paint my portrait and protect the games, protect the lives or whatever the train slogan was. And we just got that over and over. Whereas I think the more interesting thing would have been pairing him with a career and realizing like how propaganda works there. And if they're actually not just bloodthirsty kids, but they're, there's like a strategy that district is choosing to protect most of its youth by sending only the most prepared. And is that actually a brave thing to do? Like, you know, like, how do the careers work? Is this a school for evil people to send their evil kids to be evil? Or is it more about sticking it to the man by taking the choice, taking the randomness out of it and reclaiming choice? Like, I think there is so much interesting stuff at play in this world. And yeah, there's some like confusion about how it actually works. And like, what do you mean there's only 5,000 people in this one town building, taking coal or whatever? Like, yeah, I'm sure the world doesn't hold up to literal math and sciences, but I do think she's done a good job of making interesting like world building choices, but we don't get to see them when we're sitting with this character who we already know where he ends up and how quickly he kind of gives in.
Well, okay. I feel like we're about at the hour mark now with this
episode about this book. I'm like, this book, really,
I did enjoy reading it, but I'm like, looking back and the more I think about it, the more I'm like, not great. And kind of boring.
Not boring
when you're reading it, like, but sort of boring.
Less impactful. Yeah.
Well, I just kind of think it's like when you, you know, like with romance novels or whatever, it's like the people who read them obviously are enjoying them in the,
right,
in the period when they're reading it. But once you've read 20 of them, it's sort of like, wait, what happened in that? Was that the one with this? No, sort of. It's like, this is all running together. It's like, which one of these victor, or like, which one of these tribute parades did the chariot run somebody over? Which one did it? Whatever. It's like, we've gotten this four times now, and it's, there's always some kind of a little bit of drama that's going on.
It's always, oh, the city folk are simple and there's something lovely about these makeup artists and we forgive them because they don't know better. And it's like, well, I think some of them are cruel and enjoy this. And, you know, if we had Coriolanus in the first, like there should be more of that tension in these. And then things like, yeah, Maisley is cool, but we lose her through half the end of the book because we're with Haymitch, who's, yeah, I think overall I respect pieces at play here and I did enjoy the book, but yeah, I feel like there could have been more done to really drive home the point or highlight the point differently because we already knew how propaganda worked in District 12 and we already knew that. And so, yeah, like I've read all these, like, because my first reaction was, wow, that was disappointing. But then I read all these reviews and it's like, oh, well, what about this? What about this? And think about this. And I'm like, yeah, that's interesting. But that wasn't in the text. Like, that wasn't actually what we saw. What we saw was Haymitch kind of running around, waffling and getting more and more depressed as we went along, which is sad and compelling, but doesn't necessarily justify a 400-page runtime.
Well, unfortunately for our listeners, you will be stuck with this as your final episode for a bit because Shelby's going on vacation. then she's coming back. We'll do like an episode or two. Then I'm going on vacation for a bit. Oh my gosh. So the next couple months will be sporadic episodes. But then hopefully once we're, you know, get to the summer, that we're more regular again. But thank you all for listening. Send me questions for our mailbag episode, which is coming at some point once we get to the episode 300. Yes. We're getting ever closer.
Close, yeah.
Yeah, any other final thoughts, Shelby, on Hunger Games in general? The movie will be coming out next year, I think, so...
Yeah, 2026, so I don't
provided
know.
We're still doing this then. Rude. We'll have an episode on that, you know?
Yeah, thank you.
One of us could get killed at some point, you know?
You're like, right. You know, we're one step closer to a totalitarian government where we'll be sent to our own version of the Hunger Games. So you'll be the rebel rouser and I'll be the strategist and we'll see who wins.
I would pay money just to see you have to try to run across the field at the beginning and hide.
I'm very active now. Thank you very much.
You have the slowest saunter of anybody, sort of just like lollygagging through.
Yeah, well, that would save me because everyone else would run ahead of me and I could just lazily see you later, you know? I'll do the games in reverse. That's how it'll work.
I am also like... Have we not seen enough versions of the Hunger Games at this point to realize that the people who are going for the weapons are going to get killed at the beginning? It's like, just
but
run.
But that's the point, Matt, is that you think, okay, but I'll also be the one who lives because I'll have the weapons and I'll have the food. So you have to make the try. Not everyone can hide in a tree in a blind spot and hope for the best.
No. If you're looking at the people and you're like, oh, I'm a 13-year-old. I haven't hit puberty yet. I'm going up against these massive people. It's like somebody, your mentor, your some whatever.
Well, that's what they did in this one. Everyone was like, okay, don't go for the things first. Like, let's get out of there.
But then they still somehow manage to kill all these people.
Because we're not all a monolith. Some people make different decisions.
And those decisions are bad, is what we're learning. Yes, like, there's idiots in the world.
That is accurate.
Okay. This has to end. I'm like, you as a Hunger Games sympathizer, a supporter, a member of the Capitol, you're like, ugh, no, bad. Okay. Go on vacation, Shelby. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. See you guys later. Bye.